Hello and welcome to the South Talkies podcast. Today on the pod, we have Rupa Rao, director of the beautiful and charming Kannada movie Gantamute. Rupa talks with us about the inspiration behind the making of Gantamute, the process of making Gantamute, her experiences during the making of the movie, and her future projects after Gantamute. Gantamute is currently streaming on Prime Video. Spoiler alert for those who have not watched the movie, this podcast contains a lot of details about the movie. So, in case you've not watched it yet, a great way to enjoy the podcast would be to stream the movie first and then listen to this episode. So, without further ado, on to the pod.
Okay, so I think our first question will be on the screenplay. So, I saw the whole movie as a sequence of episodes in Meera's life, where she seems to, you know, figure out things for herself. I liked, you know, how she was wondering, you know, why can't she judge Madhu for the cigarettes, whereas, you know, he is asking her the same. And then there is this whole dawning of the reality on her, where she suddenly realizes that, you know, her Salman Khan is not the real life Salman Khan. You know, like, he comes with his own flaws and so on. So did you write it that way? Did you nail these, you know, like, points as, you know, some sort of episode endings, and then develop the story around them, or, you know, like, it just, you know, like, came in one flow of sorts?
So, I mean, I kind of had the slut-shaming thing in my mind, like, somewhere I wanted to insert it in some of my story. I wasn't sure which story, because it happens so often around us. It has happened to me, it has happened to my best, like, at least every other girl must have gone through it. And also, like, I also understand the perspective of the boys, that when they are influenced and when they say it, they don't even know the meaning of it. So it's not even like his fault. But then it lasts so strongly in human, like, a woman's psyche for so many years. So I knew that I wanted to insert that in some story. But then for writing Gantamute, for me, the trigger was the suicide, because it has always kind of like bothered me, and like, I've tried to understand what pushes a person to that, you know, like, when I was in 10th standard, and when I saw, like, in every results in newspaper, soon after results, there will be at least a few, you know, like, election, what am I saying, exam results, and, you know, like, failure, and it happened to some of my close associates as well, like, within, like, first and second circle, and that's when it kind of hit me that, like, somebody who goes, they die, right? They're gone. But then the one who lives on, the endurance, for them, it is so heavy, right? Like, you got to, so many unanswered questions. How are we going to live with it? And then I started thinking, who will be most affected by it, except other than the parents? I thought the person who is so deeply in love with. And then I kind of, whose love is super pure and super strong? The first love. So that is how kind of knotted them together, and that's how, and it's a risk for sure, like, to write a character-driven stories.
Yeah. You're simply more oriented towards character-driven stories than these artificially created plot highs, right, if I can call them.
Yeah, because it is very what happens inside a human head is so much more fascinating for me than how the situations are presented. Like, so there are two ways, for the way I have understood so far, to tell stories is, like, you know, like, we are like, since the childhood, we've read these stories of Panchatantra and Mahabharata and all of these stories, right? Why would they keep, let's say Tenali Rama or Birbal, you know, there is one character and situations are given to him, right? So it has always fascinated me, the creating strong characters and giving them situations and how they deal with it, then to create situations and, like, fill in with characters which has no depth, you know. So I think for me, that's been more, I think that's my exploration. I may end up doing something super strong. Like, I have tried writing some things, because I also trip on watching such films, you know, like this crime thrillers and all that. But I can't bring myself to write it somehow. Like, it's, so I don't know. So, but for now, yeah, I'm at that point where I love just getting into the layers of characters. And it is not popular in India as of now.
Hmm. But I think a lot of people want it. I think some of us, majority of us are tired of these half-baked characters. So thank you for trying this.
I'm so relieved to listen to that. It's very...
So, Rupa, nostalgia is something what we look forward to in movies always. I think that's one thing I experienced a lot while watching this film. And what I see is that there's a lot of memories of 90s in the movie. And you have set out to portray a lot of things which we have experienced. Like, I'm a Bangalorean, so I've seen a few of these things and experience. And also, you show Meera as a lover of movies. 90s movies is talked about, Hum Aapke Hai Kaun and all. So, is there something, were you able to show all of what you wanted to show in terms of nostalgia, or did you miss out? And what are your memories of 90s?
No, whatever my memories, I keep tripping on that through my films for sure. Like my previous web series, it's also set in the 90s. The Other Lost Day, I'm not sure if you've watched it. I think two things. For Gantumute, I had to write it in that era. My prime reason was because the supplementary exams after 10th standard, in until 2002, it used to happen in September, like 3-4 months after the results came, the supplementary would happen. And So you kind of end up losing the whole year. You know, I needed that time frame for his mind to start playing up. So I wrote it there. And then once I decided it's going to be in 90s because of this element, the rest of it became my joyride, because I love recreating what we have experienced in our teenage. Also with just a limited framework of the story, right? So it's super fun. And I think it's my biggest high to create these little things. Now there's a joke around our team that like how Sanjay Leela Bhansali, he has these big sets and he changes characters and makes films. So Rupa is going to just keep 90s set and keeps bringing 90s stories.
So how difficult or easy was it to recreate the 90s Bangalore?
It was challenging, but it is... like welcoming challenge, you know, like that is what we set out for. So within the framework of we don't, just because it is in 90s, we don't have to show the wide shots for no reason, right? Like whatever the story required. So that is all we needed to bother about. Just those frames, like Lekhak book or Reynolds pen or, you know, the TV. And so our frames are very solid, very small, right? Like bus stop. So we had to bring in posters there. And so it was fun. And also wherever we went wide, we had to erase all the dish antennas. You know, right now it's not those antennas like how it used to be. Now it's like the Tata Sky and all those. So those things were challenging. But biggest challenge was sound for us, because we did live sound to make sure nobody's mobile rings, to make sure no mobile ringtone seeps into the soundscape. Nobody in the frame is seen talking to mobile. That was our biggest challenge. And for a lot of wide shots, I went to Mysore. We shot it in Mysore to show it as Bangalore. So it kind of helped.
My favorite memory was the landlines. So I absolutely love that. Strangely, my mother worked in BSNL, so I have a lot of connection with it.
See, that is a character, you know, those things had a character to it, and it adds so much to the frame and the story. Like right now, like breakups and makeups happen over phone text messages, like mobile text messages, and it loses its, you know, like all that you go through to go and find an STD booth. You know, there is so much that you can build around it. Yeah, I miss it right now.
So, Rupa, I want to step away from Gantumute for a minute. I know that predominantly our discussion today will center around that. But my question primarily is regarding women directors in the field today. So now, today we have women directors who've made a stamp. You are there. We have somebody like a Sudha Kongra. We have somebody like a Zoya Akhtar. So Sudha Kongra, for example, has made a very macho film like Irudhi Sutra, Sala Kadus. And Zoya Akhtar is given a variety, like she's made Luck by Chance, and then she went on to make Zindagi Na Milegi Dubara, then Dil Dhadakne Do, then there was a very gully boy, which is uncharacteristic for a woman filmmaker in India. So the question I want to address is there a perception or an expectation from women filmmakers to make a certain kind of a movie? For instance, you've made The Other Love Story and now Gantumuti, which primarily looks at a story from a female gaze. So is there a perception of, or an expectation, or to an extent even a bias for towards women filmmakers?
Like when I'm with myself and when I'm talking to my own group of friends and all that, I don't feel any different. It's just like there's a story that occurred to me and I want to make it. And however it occurs to me, like the way I am is how I look at the world or the story. Yes, I did. I could sense certain bias when the later happened, like when the movie was ready. I'm also a producer of them. So when the movie was finished and we were looking to release it, that is when I kind of sensed that. So when we say it's a women director, immediately they think it's a sad story of some issue or like some, you know, like, I don't know, like women wanting to telling a story from a man's perspective. I don't understand how, because that will be again like a forced interpretation, because I really don't understand what's happening in a man's head, right? I mean, they're fantastic and all that, but then yet, so it will be like how a man will make a woman film, right? So in a very subtle way. So bias, yes, perception could be, but it won't affect my process with it, right? Like, it's not, I mean, like, we can't do anything to cater to somebody's perception. You just do what you do, and perception keeps changing, and hopefully it will.
Yeah, it's changed a lot, but I still wanted to understand what is on the ground today. I mean, as viewers, we may not have, but on the ground, yeah, in terms of the industry, I just wanted to get your view.
Yeah, it is. It is also like it's very new for the whole industry to kind of be in the same space of a woman, right? Or for, like, you know, I come from IT background and I've worked in Infosys for 6.5 years and traveled around. So like for me to talk to someone, I take their first name. You know, here they call each other sir or whatever, you know, like it from that lot of, for me, it was a cultural shock, but then, yeah, you get used to it. Yes, I think the more we do it, the sooner we can get there.
Thanks.
Okay. So back to Gantumuti. So this is my observation, or you can call it learning from life. So do you think girls at the same age are always more mature than the boys?
I don't think it's, I can generalize it that way. It's, it has nothing, I think it's just to each his own. Like, I think Meera was a little more mature than everybody, even the girls around her, not just the guys around her, right? So it's just the way she is built, you know, like, so I think it's each of us. I don't like to do that because I have really clicked very well with younger boys. So I don't want to. I don't think maturity is directly correlated to gender or age.
Okay. But there is this psychology study which at least says that girls develop social skills earlier than boys, at least in the toddler age. So maybe I wonder if we stop growing after the toddler age. That's the question.
Oh. Well.
Yeah. But you mentioned that the suicide especially is something you've taken as a topic because you wanted to know more about it and you saw it around in your life. But what about the rest of the story, the character development, especially of Meera? How much of it is inspired from your personal life or from somebody around you, including some, you know, specific aspects of her, like her parents working, the bullying, and other personal things related to specifically the character? How much of that is actually from real life and how much of it is real?
When anybody writes, I feel there is the fiction and reality kind of merges, right? I'm sure, like, all of us. So, like, I keep saying, when you tell your childhood experience to somebody right now, it wouldn't be just exactly the way it happened to you. It would have changed over the years, and in your own version, you present it to your friend when you're talking to someone, right? So I think that's how we all accumulate some things in our head, and then later it just becomes a story. So I wouldn't know where it came from. Did it come from? There are aspects of my own life for sure. But then it was a conscious decision to make her an only child. It was a conscious decision to make her parents working because it makes her more aloof, more lonely, so that she can. So these were conscious decisions. And I have grown up in a household where both my parents were working, but my dad was a business. Like he was an entrepreneur. He had a business, so he wasn't so far away. So there were elements that you pick from your life, but people like, you know, elements from your, I don't know, when you're growing, some things would have just accumulated. How it all just falls in place, it's only when I start writing it, it just starts coming from somewhere in my head, you know, like, so I cannot say it's completely autobiographical, or I cannot say it completely fiction. Somewhere it just gets merged. I think that's how everybody writes, you know. There can't be anything that is purely fiction, even in a movie like Avatar, you know.
Rupa, I want to go back to that slut shaming point that you made. So when that sequence plays out in the movie, there is a reference to Upendra's movie, I think, where there is a song around Dagar Dagar also. So when you were writing it, did you foresee any pushback from the industry or from viewers? Because these days, anything and everything is a controversy. And especially in the South, where, you know, male heroes have this crazy fan following and they take offense to anything and everything. That seemed to be a bit of a... So when I watched the movie, I was a little surprised. But I haven't at least come across any news on that particular front. So I just wanted to understand how that particular thing followed through.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it, and then when my immediate circle, when we were discussing it, I told my friends, so let's be ready. Because even the other love story I was telling, let's be ready. You don't know when you'll get pelted with stones, right? So this could have, this was also, I also kept telling a friend of mine to kind of reach out to Upendra to show him the film. Just so, you know, like if he likes it, kind of, you know, it's kind of him saying, just, you know, you just have to accept it. We couldn't get a chance, but Priyanka Upendra, ma'am, like his wife saw it and she loved it. But I don't think, I think people just saw the point. That's why there hasn't been any, you know, backlash as such. I was also surprised for sure, because I was kind of mentally ready, okay, this is going to happen. Because when we released the teaser, first teaser, when I was just about, we had one in New York and I was traveling to Canada just before that for Toronto premiere, I mean the Canada premiere. We released a teaser in the press conference, and it was that teaser of her kissing, and she's saying, "Mogu agbitre, what if I get pregnant?" So I was asked by a reporter, a journalist, how if I'm trying to instigate these things in today's generation. So I'm like, okay, so if this brings in that kind of a reaction, I'm like, what will the, you know? But thankfully...
It was also very odd, right? And I know you've spoken about this earlier, that the movie got an A certificate. Just because, you know, there were teenagers kissing or making out, and it just to show that the teenagers had a relationship and even a teacher was okay with it. It's very odd. So does that point to sort of a culture that still exists in the South? Because till today, I see that we cannot have a movie like what Ayushman Khurrana does in the North, and which is actually made for a mass audience and not for a niche audience. He makes movies where, you know, his mother gets pregnant when he himself is about to get married. So strangely, for all the development we have made in education, etc., that culture shift has not happened in the South. So this is sort of related to the earlier question. So I wanted to know your views on that.
I think, you know, like when you're doing a movie in Hindi, you have a larger market, so you can take those risks. So here the market is smaller. So even for Ayushman Khurrana, it's mostly metropolitan audience, right? Like, I don't know if deeper Bihar or deeper UP people are watching it and accepting it to be true, right? Or like accepting the whole story. But he's made his own niche audience. yes, you know, like it was very strange. Again, movie making is just a team effort, right? So within your team, there is nobody who is questioning these things, because for all of us, it's. I mean, we like Teju and I, when I told her the script, Teju and Nishchi, when I told them the script, they didn't question why kisses. They questioned how are we going to be shooting it. You know, it's why is it, why do we have that element in the script? Nobody even questioned it. So, and my first reality check was censor. I'm like, oh my God, where are we? Because I also told my mom, I told her, you know, there are so many kisses and all that. And she was kind of worried. And then when she saw the film before the censor and all, like the whole team and their families, we showed it to them. We did like the first premiere for all of them. Some 85 of us saw, and none of them questioned why do we have it, you know? Like all, like grandmas and grandpas and all of them. So this was my first reality check. But yes, I really don't know why are we not okay with talking about, you know, very strangely, my neighbors, this is going to be recorded. So I'm a little, I live in an apartment where sound amplifies because of no common walls. And there are times, I was telling Pallavi that there are times where I can hear some of them making out, like sounds, right? And I am always a little worried that what if my mom hearing the same too? I think we are, like, I can just talk to her about it, but I haven't, you know? So I think it comes from, I don't know where it's coming from. Like, it's ingrained in us, and hopefully as we keep making and keep talking about this, we will get there.
So a related question, right, on where you left it. So do you think this is the reality on the ground, or is it what the people in power in this film business, you know, who think that's what the audience wants?
I think it's that second one, what you said, because it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things. So the thing, I was invited for a talk with St. Joseph's College kids. Okay. They're all 18, 19 year olds. And I spent a lot of time with them before I took the workshop, because I wanted to just, I like being with young energy. And they all watched the film. They all loved it. And I started asking them, so how does it happen these days with you guys? Like, what do you guys do? How does love happen these days? You know, like I'm 35 something now. Like, no, ma'am, we meet on Tinder, we hook up, 2-3 hookups, and then if something clicks, we keep dating, and then we break up. Okay. So, ground reality is that. I mean, I could be talking about only one section of audience. I'm sure even in like villages, and because the information, access to information is so much that I don't think, but so this is a very, they haven't really been in touch with what's happening in the ground reality. I feel like the people in power.
Okay.
I mean, like in censor, they told me, how can you, kids, they're kissing. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like my answer was, see, when we were young, like when we read, see, like in our parents and grandparents' age, they were getting them married at the age of 12, 13, 14, the moment puberty hit. Why? So that their physical needs are taken care of, right? Otherwise, they will start. So now that we have pushed it to 18 and 21, that doesn't mean body doesn't produce hormones, right? So they're just attending to hormones in a very beautiful way. So no, until 21, nobody kisses. I'm like, okay.
One more question is, I think you preempted our question, so this was part of our list of questions, but you spoke about, you know, how it would be difficult for you to imagine a male psyche and write stories, you know, around it. The question is converse. So what is your take on how the male directors over the year have portrayed, you know, female love? You know, and especially the point that you raised about the physical needs, the physicality. I have never seen a movie where they talk about, you know, sweaty armpits, hormones, and, you know, all those things. So is it sort of, you know, a revenge for all the shitty portrayal of female love that you have seen over the years?
It's more like, you know, just talk real shit, people. Like, come on, it's high time. So it's, so it's like, I really felt unrepresented. You know, like, I have loved films. That's been my penance all through my life. I've watched a lot of films. But then I always wondered and as I started growing up and my life experiences started happening, and then I was like, why are you not showing what is happening around me? That doesn't happen, you know? Like, and when it happened, it has had like lasting, like, for example, stalking, you know, like it has really affected me to the till date that I get scared of SD sound, you know, like bike sound, because it has affected me so much. So these little things are not really mentioned anywhere. And yes, I think every 10, 15 years, this will happen. I feel like, you know, like you see if your kind of stories are being told, then you end up telling. That's how I think every 10, 15 years, new set of filmmakers start happening. It's not like, not consciously that I wanted to give any answer to anyone, but it just happened. I wanted to feel represented, and I wanted many girls who are like me, I'm sure, like middle class, brought up, to feel like, you know, it's we are all one together.
Unfortunately, a lot of these things are sort of romanticized or glorified also, because I have a sister, and you know, we typically were the same middle class environment. I've seen her suffer from all of the things that you mentioned. I was much younger, so I couldn't do much about it. But yeah, it was very nice to see those things being portrayed realistically for what they are. Yeah, so that was a nice part, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very one section of people who feel this way, and there is one section who feel it's, what's the point? So somebody asked me when I went to this producer with Gantu Mote, I was asked, what is the point of telling this story? Like, what is the point of all the movies that has been made so far?
Valid. No, I think what I would like to say that if something like this is shown to us when I was a teenager, I think it would have made a lot of difference, because we didn't know what's happening with us a lot of times. So some of the experiences you mentioned, like some sounds you hear, you get scared. So yeah, I think young people getting exposed to movies like this would create a difference. And I think that's a response to that producers or whoever came to you with that question. Like, it did make impact on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like, once the movie is out and once this happens, it just happens. It's like total consciousness of the world that will answer. It's not like, of course, maybe he was looking at finances, right? Like, it won't be a blockbuster, we all knew.
So my next question is a leading of the previous question. So you sort of realistically portrayed what teenage girls go through. I want to go to the character of Madhu. So Meera is attracted to him because, you know, he comes across as a macho guy. You know, he doesn't care about things and all of that. He's very easygoing. But as the movie progresses, you see that he's sort of the antithesis to what she sees and likes in movies, right? She's reminded of Salman Khan. But even though, you know, he's physically macho.
He wasn't macho. Salman wasn't macho then.
Yeah, I understand. At that time, Salman was a very goody-goody guy doing all the Rajashree and, you know, Hum Aapke Hain Kaun kind of movies. But my point was that Madhu's physically macho, but, you know, otherwise he's a very soft guy. You know, when there is a issue, you know, he doesn't go and beat anybody. He doesn't shout. In fact, even when the Dagar entire issue happens, he tells her that just because they say it does not mean you are such a person, right? So why do you take? So Was it a conscious effort to write Madhu that way to show that, you know, because typically we don't see those kind of characters. You see somebody, you know, going and beating up, you know, it's like defending the honor kind of things. But here is somebody who says, that guy is an idiot. You don't have to take his words. And that entire thread also comes to conclusion in a very beautiful way, where she silences the other people by achieving something. But my core question remains as to what was there a conscious ideation behind writing Madhu's character?
Yeah. Again, like to make it really touch home, like to be more as real as I have experienced life and I have seen things happen around me. There was a moment in my life when a couple of my friends, it was when I was in graduation, somebody was harassing me on the group of boys. And so these two, they said, okay, you go ahead, we'll meet you later. And then I go and wait near my college and these two come after 1 hour. I'm like, what did you guys do? No, we took care of it. I didn't like the feeling of it inside, you know, like, what did you guys do? So they were like bleeding and all that. And no, we took care of it. And I didn't like the idea that maybe they got into a fight or, you know, things like that, because it was my fight. I didn't want them to intervene, first of all, right? Second of all, why patronizing me? You know, like, you are not going to be around me all the time. Tomorrow, I'm walking alone home. What if these guys come? So it needs to be my fight. So I think it came from that moment. I think that is how I kind of brought in Madhu's character this way, because there were my friends who are like this, and there were my friends who are also like my dad and my brother and all of these, not too confrontational, you know, like, and very logical, like, it's not going to matter to you. So I think somewhere it all kind of got mixed up, and that's how I wrote Madhu to be this way. And he stands by her in his own way, you know, not the way she expected him to, but he stands by. And I think, and her acceptance of that, that is her journey, right? From what she thinks is true to what is true, and her journey from that to this. So it kind of gave me a nice flow.
Okay. So as a side note, there were also these guys in the auto who were harassing her, but they don't surface back again in the story. So did something happen behind the scenes? Did Madhu do something? Or is it one of those cases where some things happen and they don't happen again? So there are also cases when somebody harasses you or troubles you, and then it just goes away.
Yeah, but I don't know what has happened there. You know, there is a moment, like, next day morning, she says, I don't know what happened in the fight, but they never came back after that. Okay. The reason I didn't want to bring them back, because it didn't matter to my this story. It was just a distraction, right? Okay. What needed to come out of that episode came out to her, right? Okay. When I'm for the story, it is not in that scape. To bring again, it didn't make difference to the story narrative. So I didn't bring them back. Maybe they came back when she went to college. Who knows? After Madhu died and she's now alone. I don't know.
Okay.
So
a
couple of my favorite framing of the scenes, right? The one long shot where they're kissing in the library. You know, it's a tendency to expect that someone might walk in, right? So nothing happens there. That's one thing. And also, after the result of the supplementary exam comes in, and, you know, you show Madhu's reaction and Meera's reaction, you know, change it. But was it conscious or did I imagine this? Whenever we show Madhu, the camera seems very shaky, you know, sort of showing that he's slipping into some sort of, you know, unstable situation and so on.
Yes. This is something that we had discussed I do a lot of discussion and I spend a lot of time with my technical team and my actors before we go on shooting, because shooting is warfield. The better you're prepared, the better it is on the ground. So a lot of discussions and like to make it completely her perspective of the story. It's very personal. So we have played a lot with close-ups. So that kind of tells us what kind of lenses we need to use. So all of this, it's something that we discussed. And why I wanted it to be so, like, in the library, why I wanted them to, I wanted to give the privacy. And also, when you don't cut a scene, cut into, like, if you don't cut it and if it's one long, then it makes you feel certain way. So this is how you play with the psyche of audience, right? That is the beauty of cinema. you cut when every cut has an impact on you without you knowing when you're watching the film. So every cut was discussed. I love the process of editing in my own head. So most of the time I kind of already know how, where I'm going to cut when I'm shooting it. When I'm rehearsing it, actually, already I kind of know. So this is where I'm going to jump and go to this. So library scene, it was discussed. Even the result scene, and we wanted to do it all handheld. It so happened that he is also moving too much, right? In his body. She's not. So if camera is handheld and he is moving too much, so it gives you a lot more that, you know, movement. She's not moving. Camera is subtly moving, so you won't see it. Camera is still moving. It's handheld. So it's a very subtle movement. So these were discussed. I wanted it to be like one long, we didn't cut it like this angle. It was all in one. So they staged it and camera moved along with them, and only in the edit that we went for cuts. So all of this matters when you, how you stage it and, yeah. Like you can see, I get very tempted talking about these things. Like it's my thing. I love it.
I've heard about how you cast Teju Belwadi in that role. It happened by chance, and you know how she nicely fit into that role. So she gave an amazing performance. It was very physical, and a lot of these reactions that she gave, right? It's like, especially whatever she used to do with her lips and her nose. She used to have that very shy smile. So was there a process to how that performance came out, or was it like completely internalized? So how did she prepare for that role?
You have to ask her this question, because even I was mesmerized. When you see her otherwise, like she snaps out and snaps back in. And I am like, how are you doing it? You know, she is not someone who takes this whole thing too seriously. It's all happening in her head, and then just before we say shot is ready, she'll take a few minutes by herself. She doesn't talk to anyone, and then she's in it. So I don't know how she was telling in some interview that I happened to see, where she said it seems she tried to do those things now just in front of camera, in front of a mirror. Those things didn't come, so it was just in that atmosphere, in that moment, it just flew out of her. But then we spoke a lot about the character Meera, and she knew Meera in her. She just had to, like, in her subconscious, you know, she just had to mobilize it and then bring it out. That's it. So she's phenomenal. Like, for me, she is in the range of Sarita and, you know, like Revati. Yeah. She given right roles, she can.
Interestingly, she's not taken too many projects after that, I guess. Very odd. Yeah. It's not very sad to see that, because we don't see a lot of South Indian actresses, firstly. So that to see somebody do so well and to sort of step away is like, oh my God, why are you doing this?
I think she is just she was telling me that I've ruined it for her, because now she only expects this kind of roles and this kind of screen time, and you know, it's rare that you get 95% of the film only you are there, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully we will see more of her.
Yeah, so the next question is about, the movie talks about a lot of mental health issues, including childhood trauma, sexual harassment, his depression, and ultimately his suicide. And this is all addressed in a very subtle manner. You don't go overboard in talking about any of these issues. These issues are coming into limelight now due to certain events which have happened in the recent past. And do you think movies can play a big role in normalizing discussion on this? Discussion is happening on social media, but I don't think it is going in a very constructive manner. Do you think movies can, you know, influence this, that, you know, talking about depression or anxiety or any of these things can be made easy for everybody?
I think movies can normalize anything. That is the power storytelling, and especially movies have. And that is, I am one of the victims of it. Movies can make, I'm sure, like, to answer your question, yes, movies have, because biggest influencer. Movies like visual communication, especially cinema, especially in India, they are like the biggest influencers. And it cannot be just one coming here and there and just and like, you know, like a long gap. There should be more and more, and only then like other love story when it came and I was asked these questions, you know. But then after other love story, there has been inclusion of LGBT characters in a bigger stories and not just about LGBT, and there have been some about LGBT also. So the more you make it, I think over the years it will get normalized. I'm working on a short film, like one script on mental health right now, like just about
Tell us more about it.
It's still I kind of know what I want to do with it. I don't know the details yet, but hopefully I'll do, like I did a short film in like in the lockdown, conversation between a couple on like a WhatsApp video call. So I wanted to kind of make it into like a series. So this came about, this idea, but then now the scope of it is bigger than the telephone conversation. So I'm adding some incidents, of course, Sushant's thing that happened and few other things that we are seeing. Yeah. Like WHO wrote recently in one article that the next biggest pandemic that we are all looking at is the mental health. Like Corona, it's a physical illness, but this is something that many filmmakers make more movies about this.
Yes, we would like to see that happen, because I think that'll help ease the conversation around it. As of now, still in the urban sections, it's okay to talk about it. That too, there is some hesitance, but still, I don't think it's mainstream yet. You talked about some of your what things you're working on right now. You mentioned you're working on an anthology on our telephone conversation. So could you talk about it?
No, actually, that's I don't know if I can announce it yet because nothing is finalized. I told you about it on the phone just between us, because it's only two meetings I've had with them. Going to be hopefully, I don't know, you know, like just two core conversations. Yeah, it's an anthology where few filmmakers will come and do with a central theme, few short film, and theme being what's happening in the world, like the lockdown and stuff like that. So I might end up making this mental health film for that anthology. If that's not happening, I'll just do it by myself and just release it.
Rupa, just since you're already working on something and it cannot be talked about, hypothetical question regarding the future. So do you see more directors going towards the OTT space? This is for two reasons. One is, let's say that the COVID crisis doesn't go away anytime soon and there are restrictions and the audience may move towards the OTT space. So that is the audience being there is one reason. The second reason is we see that at least in the current environment, we are able to put out some difficult content on OTT without the fear of censorship. For example, you look at a series like Sacred Games, or the more recent conversations about caste, religion, sexuality, discrimination, which, and also because it's a series, you have a longer time period to sort of draw out the characters and put out the scope. So do you think that is where directors will be headed to? I've heard directors like Vetrimaran and Gautam Menon speak about it. So I wanted to know if you would be, or do you see that as the...
I hope not. I mean... I agree with you that it gives you that freedom and that space, and that was the reason I first made web series in 2015-16. All depends, like, you know, film, that experience of sitting in a theater and watching, you know, like that immersive experience that you get while sitting in theater and watching, I hope that wouldn't go away, you know, like it's another thing, right? It's kind of a love affair that you kind of sit there and it's between you and the big screen. The romance apart, yes, for the strong, like the stories that it really helps. And hopefully we will balance it out as we go. Hopefully, you know, hopefully not only commercial blockbuster kind of films won't just come in theater and the rest go to OTT. Hopefully none of this will happen. Hopefully we will be able to balance it out, and like, because I would want to watch great films in theater, you know, like even like many a times I've thought of a series that I've watched a series in my mobile phone or on my laptop, and I've thought it will be so great to watch it in big screen, you know. So yeah, experientially theater, it's always the first, you know, but then for stories and content, yes, OTT. So eventually I'm glad OTTs are there, you know, like for people like us, OTTs are not just where our audience are, but also like financially we kind of breathe easy with OTT's inclusion. Otherwise earlier it was only like theater or TV, you know, like satellite rights or theatrical distribution. So yeah, we wouldn't have reached where we are today if not for Amazon Prime. So yes, OTTs are a blessing, but I also miss theater experience.
I think all of us will agree with that. We're all waiting to be able to go to a theater and watch a movie now.
Yeah.
I was thinking as you spoke, so you seem to be more interested in the psyche of the mind, right? People, and but at least in Tamil cinema, there seems to be a shift. They want to talk about psyche of a society, you know, or a sect or a group of people. They might be the oppressed or they might be the oppressors. My question to you is, like, aren't they the psyche of the society influences the psyche of a person and vice versa? So how do you differentiate or say that you're talking about one issue and not the other? For instance, the Dagar issue could very well be a common thing that could have happened across, you know, like different schools and so on. So it might just talk about the mindset of the group than a particular set of people.
See, this is something that I have been thinking, and I've been talking to a couple of my friends about. First is individual. Second is immediate family and community and society, and that's how it is, right? It depends from where are you seeing. Like in social studies, we have all understood that how the, you know, like individual, and this we have understood, like the triangle, pyramid. Whatever it is, pyramid, yes. But then how you are seeing things. For me, politics, anything that's happening externally is, for me, it's inside out approach. I think that's how I am, and that's how I have seen the world, and that's how I have experienced things. Inside-out approach. If your perspective is from outside-in approach, then you will see society and then community and then this. So it is just shifting the perspectives. Like I said, like European cinema and some Iranian films, they have kind of shifted this from there to inside-out approach long ago, because I think they have kind of in society, they are in a place where there are no big issues to fight there, and it's more human psyche. So they have reached inside-out approach very smoothly over the centuries. We still have a lot happening there to bring in this approach. But then personally, this has always been my thing, you know, like for example, as a child, when I used to go to my village, but I'm born in a certain caste, it's not my thing, right? So how much do I identify with it, and how much do I get influenced by it? So how aware I am of my upbringing, you know, that's how it has been my journey, because I have seen my grandparents treating people in a certain way, right? Whereas I have loved just being around them and playing with them, you know. So it's a very personal journey for me, life has been, and I think for each of us, you know, it is a very, very personal journey. And how much of whatever is happening outside is affecting you, and how it is influencing your immediate decisions and immediate events. That is how, for me, it has unraveled. And yeah, so it's just shifting the pyramid.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for listening into yet another episode of South Talkies. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please go ahead and share it with your friends. Also, don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel. We look forward to bringing to you another episode of South Indian cinema that has fascinated us. Till then, have a great day.